Arthur. And he laid at Valhalla Cemetery for over 60 years. He'd been in movies, you know, he was a household. I thought he deserved that. And so that was really satisfying for me. The other things that we do, you know, the Sharon Tate, when I do the Health Discovery Tour, I donate money, and then we did the Karen Carpenter Tour, and I donated money. But it's not really part of the selling point, I guess, is maybe I'm appeasing my guilt. I don't know what it is, to be honest with you. I feel better about it giving back. I really do. And I'm grateful that they take the money, especially the Sharon Tate, the Doris Tate Crime Victims Bureau. I thought for some reason they might send the money back, but they are very grateful to get that money too. So that makes me feel good. And, you know, it can't hurt.
No, absolutely. And again, I do think it's important that people are aware of that, just to clear up that gray area, if you will. Now, one of the things that you have been involved with was the writing and directing of the 6 Degrees of Helter Skelter. If you could, going through the documentary process with this, and having to go through the whole Manson timeline and whatnot, just as the Helter Skelter tour does, and it is an extremely educational tour. This isn't something that is blood splatter on the wall and trying to, again, embellish all this stuff. This is a very factually guided tour. Now, how was the process of the documentary for you? Did you learn anything more? Did you feel any different about the crimes, if you will, after you did the documentary and got really down into the whole thing?
The interesting thing about, well, there's many interesting things about the Tate-LaBianca murders, and I don't stop learning, because there is always another fact that's going to rear its head. You know, I meet people all the time. This is Southern California. This is where this event took place. And I've met so many interesting people that had, you know, something to do with the case, which is why we called the documentary The 6 Degrees of Helter Skelter, because almost, you know, everybody can associate themselves within a few degrees to somebody involved with this case. So learning, I learn stuff all the time. We did we originally released the documentary, and then it was picked up for distribution, and we added more information to it for that reason. It was just, it's always some interesting fact that comes up. And you know, the other day I learned about 4 or 5 different guests that were at Sharon Tate and Roman Polanski's wedding. It's incidental, you know, it's not information that's going to change the world, but it certainly is fascinating to me that Terrence Stamp or Michael Caine or Peter Sellers were at Sharon and Roman's wedding. I just find that so interesting. You know, but that's my own personal obsession, I guess.
I just want to mention to anyone listening to the show right now or the program that you can go to www.dearlydepartedtours.com. Now, I'm looking at the site right now as I speak, and what I found interesting is the girls next door on entertainment television had written a nice, I guess, testimonial saying your tour was the best. Do you want to speak on this at all?
Oh, well, sure. I was approached by Bridget, actually. I, to be honest with you, it wasn't a show I ever watched, and it was something that was sort of a surprise to me that Bridget, in retrospect, contacted me, and she just wanted some information about my tour. And she mentioned what she wanted to do for this show called The Girls Next Door. She said, we were talking about doing the Black Dahlia. And I thought, okay, the Black Dahlia, everyone knows about that. But then she mentioned Thelma Todd. And I'm thinking, do you know who Thelma Todd is? That surprised me, because I figured, you know, I was going to be in the back of a car with a bundle, and quite truthfully, it's not really my gig. But when I talked to Bridget about it, she seemed like she was, you know, really knowledgeable. So they rented a hearse for the day, and I took them around to famous, you know, sort of haunted locations around Hollywood. And we had a ball. We had a great time. It was fascinating, and the three of them were really charming. I thought they were really just lovely girls. I really enjoyed them.
It to me, I have to say again, the tours are always top-notch, first class, full of information and very well done. So I can, you know, speak for having been part of that. Now, I have a question as far as when you were interviewed on CNN for the tour, for the Manson murder locations, how did they go into it and how did they end the tour? Do you think there was any change in their perspective?
Well, they were, everyone sort of hops on the bandwagon when it comes to the anniversary of the murders, August 8th. There's always going to be a report on television, on the news, locally, certainly. And I did the CNN thing. I did loads of them around the 40th anniversary, which was back in 2009. I don't think I necessarily changed anybody's perspective, or I don't know. It's always going to be a curiosity to people, always, because it's so fascinating. So you know, by showing people exactly where these things happen, you know, it's always, I mean, I could watch and have watched dozens of documentaries about the Tate LaBianca murders, and I think they know that. I think news agencies know that people will always turn their head when they see Manson's face on television. And one of the things that was important to me to do when I established that tour was to take away sort of the power that Charlie Manson has over people, to sort of dispel this monstrous myth of him, because he was just a con artist. He was a crook and a pimp, and and they've made him into this boogeyman, and he's 5'2". He's a little, you know. Anyway, yeah. So that was important to me to show people that aspect of things. I'm not glorifying the murders. In fact, it really bothers me a great deal when I see shirts that say "Charlie don't surf" and you know, people making light of these things. It's quite sad because 7 people on those 2 nights died horrific deaths, and more aside from them. And that's I wanted to get the victim's perspective rather than Manson's.
And that is very well appreciated, I'm sure. And if I may, Scott, can I talk about what happened last summer on the anniversary of Tate's at El Coyote with the table situation?
Sure, yeah. That was I still get creeped out by that one. I don't usually get weirded out, but that was, yeah.
It was very strange. We had happened to run into one another on the anniversary of Sharon the Tate murders, and we were at El Coyote, and I had been filming something, and Scott came in with his crew, and we ended up having dinner together, but the table that I had reserved, which was that table, the Tate table, as it's called, this group of individuals had come in and had actually started up a big stink about it. How many were there? About 20 of them, they said?
There were quite a few. I don't know. I just remember the their really confrontational attitude. It was really intimidating, and I got, well, as you did, just bad vibes and
bad vibes. They're Manson followers. Manson, I would say, worshippers, if anything. And it's really sad, and it's extremely scary to think that this whole thing continues today. But that, to me, was a huge eye-opening experience because, as innocent as you know the whole night was, and to have this caveat thrown in and to have to deal with some people of that mindset, these worshipers or whatever, I can't tell you how bizarre it was. And the fact that some of these people were younger people. And that actually leads me to ask you, and I have asked you this in person in the past, how often do you have these followers, if you will, on the tour? Do they appear in that venue or no?
If they have, they haven't told me. I mean, I know that there are people that are sort of underground, kind of edgy people that have, you know, Manson tattoos on and things like that. And I wonder about their shrine frame, if they're just doing it to be dangerous and rock and roll, or if they have a genuine interest in it. I've only had one incident where people have someone who I knew was going to be who's ahead of Manson's online community wanted to come on the tour, and they wanted to film a little documentary about her and her involvement with the family, and I wouldn't participate in that. I just don't need that. You know, I find that it's a fine line, a very fine line. It's a very blurry one for me, but if I was aware of it, I wouldn't want to be exposed to it. On the other hand, because I'm in that community, because of what I've done by the documentary, I'm sort of exposed myself to that.
Right.
And I do get phone calls, and I do get just unusual people showing up. But on the tour itself, I don't think that I've had any quote unquote family members.
Okay.
Although I did have a guy on my tour. Pardon me. I'm sorry. That claimed he was son. And he's in a band out here in L.A. called New Rising Sun. And it's all very, as I said, very rock and roll. You know, he is the spitting image and makes himself into the spitting image of that Manson Life magazine cover, you know, with the crazy eyes.
Yeah.
And he claimed that his father or his mother was, he found his birth mother who claimed that she was raped by three people, one of them being Manson. So his quest was to find to prove his lineage or not, and he's sort of sheepish and Manson's my dad kind of thing, and I took the, this is part of a documentary that he was doing for this reason, and I took him up to the La Bianca house and I told them, I explained to him that Charlie went in there and he tied up Mr. and Mrs. La Bianca. He was reading the paper, she was unpacking. And he tied him up and left them there. And the others, you know, she was stabbed 41 times. He was stabbed 26 times. You know, they carved the word war to his stomach. They wrote words, you know, it was awful. And they sang while they were doing it. And I could tell, as I was explaining this to this kid, who claims to be Manson's son, that I could see he was sort of deflating right then. Like, he didn't know. And that's what's frustrating, is that people don't realize the extent. They just see Manson's face and they think it's cool.
Yeah, I agree. We do have some questions, Steph. Do you want to ask Scott?
Yes. Well, the first question I'll bring up, it comes from Jibs, Jill. And it was, which one is your favorite tour?
Well, you know, the Dearly Departed tour is sort of a lighthearted look at the dark side of Hollywood, and it talks about sort of silly stories. I mean, it's about people who died, but sometimes their deaths are so interesting that maybe their names haven't been said out loud in a long time, but the way they went is really interesting, and sometimes it prompts people to look them up and look at their movies. And I loved putting that tour together because it's the history tour. You know, you do have the Whitney Houston thing going on, and Mae West. You know, you also hear about, you know, an actress named Marie Prevost, and also it disproves the nonsense that was written by Kenneth Anger in that ridiculous book Hollywood Babylon. It's my favorite. I love that tour. Now the Helter Skelter tour, you know, that was a lot of research, and it was really interesting for me. So that's the one tour that only I'll do because I can't train anybody to do that. I have two other people that, Brian and Richard, who are my tour guides, that do the regular, Dearly Departed tour. So the Helter Skelter tour is something that's very, intense, and it was something that I really followed and was an obsession of mine. We have a Hollywood movie tour, which is a bit more mainstream and very, very good movie locations. It's hard to pick one because it sounds so dramatic and so cliche to say they're all my babies. But there was love put in all those tours, and I'm proud of them all.
Yeah, excellent.
All right, so I know we have other questions, Jill, and before we get to those, and if you want to, you know, collect those, my question to you, Scott, is, all right, so there has to be some controversy behind this, right? So there has to be people who say, why are you doing this? Or maybe even celebrities who say, stop this, don't do this, or don't put out this information about us. I mean, what do you have to say about that?
20 years ago when I started doing this with another company called Graveline Tours, it was dangerous back then, but it's weird because we would go down Roxbury Drive, and this is the street where everyone lived, you know, Peter Falk, Lucy, Jack Benny, Jimmy Stewart, And Jimmy Stewart actually came down and stuck his head in the hearse one day and said, you know, you're in a hearse, you know, and Jimmy Stewart was really cool about it. And it was at that time we were the only ones doing it. Then Jimmy Stewart died and we were the ghouls. We'd been doing something that we'd done every single day, and the news crew just happened to be outside his house that day, and we were being terrible. And I'm thinking, wait a second, Jimmy Stewart thought we were kind of cool. You know, so things have changed. There's not a single tour company anymore that doesn't pass where Michael Jackson died, which is, it's a 360, or 180, I should say, or whatever that turns out to be.
180.
Yeah, thank you. And society has changed. People's interests have changed. We have, you know, these days TMZ is the first place people go to verify if somebody famous has died. So we're no longer in the closet, so to speak. It's become quite commonplace and part of our culture every day.
Yeah. Interesting. What do you have to say about the whole Michael Jackson? I mean, have you been there?
To his house?
Around there, yeah.
Yeah, sure. It's on my tour. We go there every day. It's history, and it's still going on. You know, there's another trial happening right now. So, you know, people, you can go to a half a dozen homes around the Los Angeles area where Michael Jackson lived at one point in time. But where he died, you know, that became like a shrine after that. So that was history. And, you know, there that's what we do. That's the history tour. It may not be the history that everyone wants to embrace, but, you know, they don't have to take my tour. That's why we run with two buses and we don't have 80 buses like, you know, the other tour company. It's a specific interest. It's a niche market.
It is. I just want to remind everybody, if I can, for a moment, that you're listening to UPRN 107.9 FM out of New Orleans. And I am Jill Marie Morris with Stephanie Benetti, who is my co-host. And our guest tonight is Scott Michaels of Dearly Departed Tours. And Scott, another thing that you have started and I think is really fascinating for educational purposes or just interest is findadeath.com. And I'll refer to the website as www.findadeath.com. Tell everybody a little bit about how you got interested in this and what the site is about.
Well, I started Find a Death because it was at the beginning of the internet before everybody had computers. And I was living in England, and I knew tourism. I that's what I did before I moved to England. So I started Find a Death to kind of give people an online sightseeing tour, like I did when I lived in Hollywood. So that's what I did. I took pictures of where famous people died, and I posted them online with little biographies of who they were. I started that back in, I think, 1998. So, as things go on. Now I do have the standards, you know, Gene Kelly and Judy Garland and Jimmy Stewart, et cetera. And a lot of the people I've met in my life too. So I have like personal stories that I could put up there. And I also choose to put, you know, trivia, just certain odd bits of information that maybe not everybody knows. And then some of the other people I concentrate on are people that may not so well known, like Frances Xavier, who played Aunt Bee on Andy Griffith. You know, she moved to the fictional town of Mayberry, which they assigned to a place called, I forget it was in North Carolina, but they would have these Andy Griffith conventions, and she moved there, and she ended up being like the crazy cat lady with 100 cats in her house, and, you know, and a Studebaker with 4 flat tires in her garage, and, you know, it was, you know, just really interesting. Or also the Hilton twins, not Paris and Nikki, but Violet and Daisy Hilton, who were the original Siamese twins, or not the originals, but they were probably the most famous. They were beautiful women that they were attached by a hip bone, I think it was, and they were put on display, around circuses. And I find people like that really interesting. So I started just doing the research of who interested me and how they died and where they ended up. I often compare it to a biography that ends with the end, they died, and that's sort of where I pick the ball up and tell you, you know, how, where, and where the funeral was and where they're buried kind of stuff.
Go ahead, Steph.
Well, Jill, you're a crazy cat lady.
I have three cats. Well, I say I have three cats. I have two and a half. The half is so old, it doesn't do much.
I make jokes, Scott. I'm a dog person, and Jill's a cat person. So we have this little joke where I call her a crazy cat lady. So anytime I hear that. So Scott, what are you currently working on? What would you like to throw out there?
Well, you know, the tour goes on as usual. Actually, we just on Sunday, we opened up a shop on Sunset Boulevard a year ago on Sunday, and it's a collection, a gallery of odd bits of history that I've collected over the years, and the list is constantly growing, and we had on Sunday, I had unveiled the. There's no nice way to put this, but I unveiled the bed that Rock Hudson died in, not the mattress, but the actual frame of the bed that Rock had died in. It's just really interesting objects. The pink suitcase that Jane Mansfield packed on the night that she was killed, a tile from the swimming pool that Brian Jones of the Rolling Stones drowned in, a piece of Carol Lombard's plane crash. So this is an always growing collection. And that's my main concentration. We're working on another DVD called Dearly Departed Volume 2, where we visited several locations where things have happened. We had retraced James Dean's last day from that morning till he was killed that evening. And we went into the Wonderland house where the infamous Wonderland murders happened, with John Holmes was involved, and Yvette Vickers, who was a Hollywood actress who died a couple of years ago, but she'd been dead for several months before anyone found her, and we had access to that home as well. So that collection of clips, Dearly Departed Volume 2, will be released by the summertime as well. So all sorts of things going on, and I'm excited by all of them. We're also working on another Dearly Departed weekend in early October here in Los Angeles, which went really well. Jill, you attended last year, and I hope you'll be able to make it this year.
Actually, I was just saying today, this afternoon, as soon as you let me know the dates, I'm going out to California for the whole weekend.
Oh, wonderful. It'll be great to see you again.
Yeah, I can't wait. And I just want to make mention of that again. The Dearly Departed weekend this past year, it involves a lot of different events. There were speakers there. Craig Harvey was one of the speakers, correct?
If I remember correctly.
Who's the LA coroner. And very informative about different things. There is something for everyone. Friday night, I didn't get to make because of traffic issues. But you guys had a band, bars. You can buy the tickets for either the whole weekend, or you can buy tickets for specific events during the weekend. They had a fantastic tour, again, educational relative to the St. Francis Dam and the bridge in Pasadena. So I highly recommend people, if you want to have a very interesting weekend filled with fun and education and history with great people from all over the country, keep checking back at the Dearly Departed website and start saving money for your tickets, because it's well worth the trip.
What a fantastic commercial that was. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. But no, I really enjoyed it. Again, I'm a historian. I love these things that, you know, they're odd in a way, some of that. You know, the St. Francis Dam, to me, was probably one of the most moving experiences I've ever been a part of because of what transpired when you were putting the cross out on the dam. I still cannot get over that whole situation that unfolded. But with that said, it's just a really super nice weekend. Again, you raised money with the silent auction to get the gravestone, and it's just something different to do. And I highly recommend it. So you're welcome, and I can't wait for this October. So. And I have another couple of questions. Why don't you, if you could, explain a little bit how you got involved with one of my favorite cult phenomenons, Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Well, when I was living in England, I was involved with somebody that worked on a talk show, and they were at a shortage for guests. And I was asked, you know, who do I want to meet? And I was a Rocky Horror fan when I was growing up. I started when I think it was 1978 So the film was out for a few years already, and it was already a well-known sort of phenomenon at that point. And I got really into it in Detroit, and that was sort of the first time I ever developed a social circle. You know, everyone at Rocky Horror was sort of like an outcast, they always say, or, you know, a freak is an odd term I don't think I've ever used, but you know, just obsessed a little bit and really enjoyed, looked forward to that. And so I wanted to meet a woman who was in the movie named Patricia Quinn, who played the Maid Magenta. And they got her for the show, and I got to meet her. And you know, when she, you know, it's funny because I asked her if she ever wanted to go out to dinner, and I got a message on my answering machine the next day from her after I left her that message, and I still have that message because I was so excited that she called. And so we ended up developing a friendship, and we thought about trying to get, you know, a story together, her story, about the making of the show. And I did the little bit of writing I did with Find It, actually had no experience. And so we did, that project sort of went nowhere, until I met another gentleman who was an established writer and decided that he actually was friends with Tim Curry, when he was younger. So I started, tracking down people that were in the movie and interviewing them. The Transylvanians were an obsession of mine. They were sort of like Munchkins or the Wizard of Oz, you know, and as I found out later on, that's exactly what they were. That's what they wanted to portray. It was like the Wizard of Oz and with the Munchkins. So I became friends with little Sadie Corey, who was 4'2". She was the midget, the shortest little, they call them little people now, but midget's a medical term, so I don't mind using it. And she and I developed we were really, really close. And it just started unfolding. I was meeting people like, you know, most everyone involved in it. Susan Sarandon, he gave me a half an hour on the telephone. Barry Bostwick talked to me for about an hour and a half. So it was kind of neat to have this, this collection of interviews that were published in a book called, Rocky Horror From Concept to Cult, that was published about 10 years ago. And, so I started collecting items through the people that I'd met in the show. I met, Peter Henwood, who played actually Rocky, the blonde-haired, blue-eyed monster in the movie, and he sent me his original script from the movie, and I met Brian Thompson, who designed all the sets, and I have the miniatures that were used to build the sets, and Sadie gave me her costume that she did the time warp in. So I have all these items, along with all the things I've collected over the years, and now that has a permanent home in my office as well. I was really proud when that book came out. It was sort of, I was kind of proving wrong all those people that thought I was an idiot for spending all those evenings at the movie theater, you know. And it was really satisfying to go, well, yeah, where's your book, you know.
All right, I have a question, and I know that anyone listening has to have this in their head because, all right, it is UFO Paranormal Radio Network. A lot of people are into the paranormal. And now you're talking about collecting items that were, you know, say in terms of celebrities' deaths and all of that, and these tours. So what exactly, in terms of paranormal, have you experienced, if anything? Or who's come to you paranormally, I'd say?
I've had all of these items before I opened up my store. Most of these items were in my home. And I was never particularly sensitive to that sort of thing. And I'm not saying I'm very sensitive to those things now, but I'm a bit more than I was. And I've had people that were mediums or psychics come into my home, and they just, like, they were on overload because of all the vibes being thrown off by all these different items. I had seen a person in my home twice, as I laid in bed at the front of my door of my bedroom. And this person, it was just an outline, was looking in and then sort of turned and walked into my laundry room. And I had someone who did this for a living, and she went straight to my laundry room. And said, "What happened in here?" And I said, "I don't know, but where I'm seeing this apparition or this person is on the opposite side." And I didn't realize, but it shared the wall. in that wall in my laundry room were this box of the fireplace from the rocks from the fireplace of the Tate home.
Oh dear.
And that was after I got rid of those stones out of my home, things changed. It hasn't stopped necessarily, but it's gone away considerably, and I've learned more about using things like sage, to sort of calm things down, because I don't mind them being around if there is anybody around. I just want to make sure that it's all good, and there's not anything negative going on. Because now, if things happen, the other day actually I was working in my office, and I have a large cabinet in my office, a large wooden cabinet, and the door just swung open, and I looked up and said, don't even do it, don't even start, because it's not acceptable, So I've gotten sort of used to it. It doesn't really bother me that much anymore. I'm not going to say it doesn't startle me if something happens, but it's not something I feel threatened by.
And what about the people who have come to your home that you said that they had an overload? Like, what was their experience?
Well, just because there was so much energy sort of flying around the home, because, on this wall was a painting that was done by a man that killed many people, and then over here is this fireplace where five people were killed, and over here is the Hindenburg, where I don't know how many people died in the Hindenburg, and then, a piece of coal from the Titanic, and it was, I think it was just a lot of energy coming off of these, because I guess it's been proven to be, that these items do sort of absorb energy.
Absolutely.
From the events. I mean, I always equate it with echoes, these walls, these bricks that I have from these places heard these things happen, and therefore, retain some of it. And so, never anything specific when anyone came into my home about this particular thing. However, except for that one case with the Tate stones. And then Jill, you came into my shop and you went bam, straight for them too. You knew exactly where they were. You didn't know what it was, but you went straight for that, box of fireplace stones.
Yeah, Jill, tell everyone that story.
Well, Scott had wanted me to go check out, I had heard a little bit about some commotion going on in the shop, so I figured I'd go in and do my own assessment. And downstairs, immediately, you could tell there were several spirits around. A couple were more predominant. None of them are bad. And then I went upstairs, and when you walk upstairs, he's got everything laid out. And Scott, correct me if I'm wrong, because I think Jane had told me you guys had rearranged some stuff, but when you'd first walk upstairs, there were glass cases with some memorabilia and some artifacts in them, and then beyond that was like a storage area. Is that correct, Scott?
That's right, yeah. Locked room, yeah.
A locked room. So they opened up the door, and everybody came up behind me. All I can remember is I gravitated to one specific area, and it was extremely overwhelming to me. Actually, I got out of breath, meaning the closer I got to it, it was taking my breath away. I was a little dizzy. It was very negative. It was very sad. It was very heavy. And I learned after the fact that those were where the Sharon Tate Firestone rocks were located, and there were a couple other spots. But there's a lot of energy. There's some very interesting characters that hang out at Scott's. And I totally agree. We've had this conversation, Scott, you and I have had the conversation about, you let them be. They're not hurting anything. Some of these objects do absorb what I call, it's like a spiritual DNA imprint in that. It's charged with that energy of the environment. And I kind of helped him I made a little altar that I incorporated a lot of different things, some religious, some just more elemental. And just did a blessing, and it's quieted down, but there's always going to be, people hanging out with them. And that's okay. It is, for somebody that may be sensitive, it's definitely a little startling. And as long as Scott has the open mind like he does and stays on top of things, I don't foresee a problem. It's interesting, though, because some people I think it was it Groucho Marx or somebody that I picked up on that you have something from? What was that, Scott? He was like...
I don't know. Maybe George Burns, maybe?
Maybe it was something... One of the comedians or something popped out and was so loud and in my face. But that's the kind of environment, and it is extremely fascinating, and it's only normal given the situation of having these things confined in an area. So it was just quite an experience.
Well, what I'd like to mention, pardon me, is that, you know, people listen to Jill and I each week, and, you know, we do tackle really, like, social topics and, you know, whether it's sociology or psychology and all these kind of hard-hitting kind of news items and whatever. What they don't know, Jill, and I've known, is you're a fantastic psychic medium, and it's not that you're pursuing that as your life. I mean, you're an author. You do a lot of other things, and I don't really think we've basically have told our listeners or showcased that you actually are a psychic medium and a great one at that. And I know this is a little sidetracked, but I'm going to talk about this briefly, even though we're going to come back to you, Scott. I just want to say, the other night I was on the phone with Jill, and it had to be like 1 in the morning, and my dog starts staring at something and keeps circling around the coffee table and going back to the spot and staring at the couch, just empty. And I'm talking to you, Jill, and then I said to you, I said, something's going on here right now. And you said to me, yes, somebody's sitting there, and his name is Anthony. Now, I haven't had a lot of people who have passed in my lifetime that have been close to me, but I did have a friend named Anthony, and he was roughly in his late 30s when he passed. And you said to me, you know, Anthony's there, and you said he's a guy in his late 30s, and you actually described exactly what he would wear and stuff like that. And as you're talking to me, my dog keeps staring at it, and I got a little freaked out because I'm saying, you know, all my friends are strange in some way. You know, it's all good, though. And, you know, you told me so many things. Like, there was no way, because he passed away in, like, 2004, I believe, and I haven't mentioned him in years, and my family knows of this guy, and I used to help him out, and the family owned an arcade, and you started saying to me, oh, there's clowns, there's trains, just such crazy stuff. And you really, you know, like you said to me, he keeps calling you my friend, and that is actually the phrase that he would always say. He would always say, my friend, Stephanie. Like, you know, he was a simple guy. He didn't have a lot of friends. I kind of just, my heart just went out to him, and I was nice to him and his family and stuff like that. And, you know, it was so interesting because I'm sitting there, like, here I am at my kitchen table going, this can't be happening right now, you know. And you're telling me, no, he's looking after you. He's watching your front door and stuff like that. And, you know, so we talk about paranormal, and, you know, I'm not one to elaborate on any BS, and I'm the first. Like, you actually said to me, what's with May? And he actually passed away in May, and I had to add that fact because I couldn't remember. And just so many things. And it was kind of like refreshing because I thought, like, you know what? This guy is here. That's cool. He could stay here. And, you know, I have a nice home, and you're welcome here, and you want to look after me and stay by my front door. And I have no idea how my dog was so obsessed, really obsessed. But, you know, just talking about the paranormal and Jill, just a credit to you for that matter. I mean,
oh, gosh.
No, I was thoroughly impressed. And that's only one of a few other stories I do have about Jill. But it aids to your credibility for that matter. So,
but that's, I would like to say, and Scott, this goes with you, is that in these situations, people get so freaked out. And Scott's got a good head on his shoulders. He's not doing anything for malice. And I had talked to him about this last year. It's a lot of people are just like, they get nervous or antsy because somebody comes through and wants to communicate. But in Scott's situation, there is not one person that's upset with what he's doing, one spirit, I should say, that's upset with what he's doing. And if you look at it from the perspective of what Scott does, he is continuing a celebrity story postmortem. Okay, and that needs to be told. These people, these celebrities, gave up the right, and I don't want to sound crass about this, but they did relinquish the right to privacy as a celebrity. So you know, for Scott to pick up the ball, like he said, and carry it further and talk about their death, you know, a lot of these celebrities had egos. So they're, you know, really, it's kind of carrying through with what they would want. I've never picked up on anything malice-wise in there. And Scott, I think, knows that and should be at least happy with the fact, even though you're surrounded with a lot of history and a lot of tragedy, but there's a lot of good things like Sadie's outfit and whatnot. It's all good, I guess, in the end. How do you feel about all this sensitivity and communication that goes on in there, Scott?
I think that it's kind of, it's hard to say, Jill. It is hard to say because I'm not quite sure what you meant by that. But I do. I'm pleased if there's an aspect of what I do that pleases people in the afterlife. That makes me happy. The people I worry about are the people living. Those are the ones that scare me. I'm quite comfortable in my own skin. And as I've said this before, I may go for the cheap joke at maybe somebody's expense, but I don't mean any real harm by it. And I think that they really. You know, like, especially with the Tate victims. I thought if there's ever going to be a problem, with spirits or something like that, it would be with one of them. But I think I'm in good graces with them. I don't want to sound too comfortable either, because it's not, I should be aware of it. You know, I should be aware that they're there and treat them with respect.
Right. I was just going to say, as long as you're respectful, I mean, you give respect, you get respect, and that's basically it.
It is, and I didn't mean anything negative by that, Scott. I just want to clarify. No, it's all good. And I think that, unfortunately, some of the objects that have some attachment to them, let's say the Tate Stones, it's not you, and I'm sure that there are situations where people may not like that. You made a really good point that basically with these objects, you're not being disrespectful, but at the same time, you're showcasing their life, you're paying homage to them, if you will, and to present it in the manner that you do, which is not tacky or cheesy or anything of that nature, it comes from a place that's sincere, and that's what's most important. So, you know, that the problem is with the living. I totally agree. It's people shouldn't be afraid of the dead, really. It's the living problem.
Yeah, that's what, often when people ask me, you know, do people's families come after you? It's well, no, not really. You know, some people that maybe rent a home, you know, like get angry with me, but it's really never ever families that approach me and ask me about. I'm trying to think if I've ever. I had an email confrontation with Tammy Wynette's widower. And it was quite an angry exchange, and he was just calling him in the book and said I was a liar, et cetera, et cetera. But then over the next couple of years, every single thing I said, you know, came true as far as what I wasn't predicting anything. But he was saying, you know, I wasn't involved with this cheerleader, and he got married to her. And he said, I'm not writing a book about Tammy, and he wrote a book about Tammy. So it was kind of funny. But very rarely do people that are relatives ever come after me. One other exception would be Selena's father. He came after me, and I had to get lawyers involved with that one. But he was just being protective of his daughter, and I understand that to a degree. I do question his motivations. I think they're more financial than anything else. But ultimately, it was his daughter, and I can appreciate where he was coming from. And I resentfully had bowed to his wishes, and it's their family, basically. You know, I understand that, and their attachment, and their maybe anger at that aspect of their life being accentuated. But mostly, the people that give me a hard time are people in apartments where things happened. You know, and they look out their window at the Tragical History Bus And then they're reminded every day that, you know, somebody was killed in their apartment or something like that. And, you know, that's L.A.
Well, you've got to appreciate their feelings. I mean, really.
Sure I do. I of course I do. But, you know, that's the breaks. You know, it is history. And my conscience is clear, you know, but the thing about LA is, which is an odd law, if something horrible happens in your home in Los Angeles, you're only obligated to tell somebody for a 3-year period of time.
That's right.
So if the Manson murders happened in your house and you put the house up for sale, you don't have to tell anybody because it happened 43 years ago or 44 years ago.
Oh, you mean in terms of real estate? In terms of real estate sales,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Okay.
But if you're renting, they don't have to tell you at all. So yes, I do understand that, but that doesn't mean it didn't happen. You know, that's the breaks. You know, I apologize, you know, but there's nothing that, you know, it's what I do, and it's take people to the news, you know. These things happened, remember, I don't know if you saw the first documentary that we did, Jill, but we did a thing where there was a man by the name of Albert Decker, and Albert
yes.
Decker was a man who killed himself through autoerotic asphyxiation. But by saying that doesn't even touch what he did to himself. I mean, we're talking lipstick, hypodermic needles, horse's bit, a noose. I mean, it went on and on and on. And we were going to film the documentary, and a friend of mine lived in that apartment building, and he said, well, let's use my apartment because it looks just like that one. I said, okay, but why don't we just for the hell of it knock on the apartment door and see if we can get in? And we did. And the woman that was in the apartment, I said, can we see your bathroom, please? and she let us in, and I proceeded to tell her exactly what happened in her bathtub. And after a little bit of a freak out, you know, she was actually kind of thought it was kind of cool that happened in her house, in her apartment. So, you know, the people react in different ways. I thought that was kind of a hoot.
Yeah.
We actually need to take a station break, so we're gonna come back in a few minutes. I know I've been prompted here. So I just want to remind everyone, you've been listening to UFO Paranormal Radio Network, and this is Stephanie Benetti and Jill Marie Morris, and we're speaking with Scott Michaels, and we're gonna be back, and this is UPRN 107.9 FM out of New Orleans, and our show is a bit extended tonight, so stay tuned, and we'll be back shortly. To the social issues, select other, and enter the UFO Paranormal Radio Network.
Light up your night with the Kevin Smith Show. Hi, this is Kevin Smith. Join me Monday through Friday right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Hey, hi there. Got your attention? I'm Gia Scott, and I was curious what you were doing from 7 to 9 p.m. Central Time on Tuesdays. See, I host this really interesting little radio program that airs live then, and we bring in all sorts of guests, authors, experiencers, and everything in between. It's paranormal and guaranteed to make you go, My guest list is always up at www.giascott.com, and do tune in to the Dawn of Shades from 7 to 9 p.m. on Tuesdays.
Breaking news. Strange black pyramid UFO ships over every major city on the Earth. People are exhilarated and scared. Reptilian strange creatures are beaming down. My God, they're with them. Don't put that probe there. Don't put that probe there. Don't put the... Listen to the Church of Mabus radio show at 11 p.m. Eastern, Saturday nights with host Jeffrey Pritchett, bringing you the High Strange. Visit www.churchofmabusradio.com. That's www.churchofmabusradio.com.
you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you?
Hello, everyone. I'm psychic medium Christopher George, and along with Victor the Voice Furman with Second Sight NYC. Victor, who's our guest this week?
Chris, our guest this week is Annie Kagan, a chiropractor living in Manhattan who abandoned her hectic city life in search of serenity in a small, secluded house by the bay. When her brother Billy died unexpectedly and began speaking to her from the afterlife, Annie agreed to accompany him on his journey through the mysteries of death. As Billy reaches out from the other side to change his sister's life and the lives of those around her, he shares secrets about the bliss and wonder of life to come in her book, The Afterlife of Billy Fingers, How My Bad Boy Brother Proved to Me There Is Life After Death.
Well, if he was a bad boy and he made it to heaven, I guess there's hope for me yet, Victor.
Tune in to the Mind Cemetery with your hosts Chip and Nicole every Monday night at 9 p.m. Eastern.
Exclusively on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. We delve into UFOs, abductions, ghosts, aliens, conspiracies, and cryptozoology.
And how could you ever forget about those creepy topics you won't hear on your local news?
This is where I would insert my obligatory skeptical statement. The Mind Cemetery, where the paranoia about the paranormal comes to rest.
Follow us on Twitter and subscribe to us on Facebook. Also, check us out on our website, mindcemetery.com, for show updates and the critically acclaimed Mind Cemetery blog.
It's not critically acclaimed, but you should check it out anyway, mindcemetery.com.
Hey everybody, this is Jill Marie Morris from Perspective X. If you've been searching for a variety talk radio show with an edge, then look no further. Join my co-host Stephanie Benetti and I as we get down and dirty discussing the latest hot topics and relevant newsworthy stories. Informative, engaging, and quite often controversial, Perspective X is a unique blend of insight, opinion, and wit. So tune in and listen every Wednesday night at 10 p.m. on UPRN 107.9 FM New Orleans. It's not just an opinion, it's our perspective. Perspective X.
Hi, everybody. This is Erica Getch. I hope to see you on Friday at 8 p.m. Pacific on the Galactic Connection, keeping you connected 1 hour at a time. For more information, please visit thegalacticconnection.com.
You are listening to UPRN 107.9 New Orleans.
Tune in to UFO Undercover, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Stephanie Benetti, and along with Joe Montaldo, we co-host a new show called News on the Flip Side. You can catch us every Saturday night, 8 Central, where we will be discussing current events and topics going on in the world today. We have opinions on everything. There's no topic that we won't discuss, and we'll go places that other shows wouldn't dare. False history gets made all day, every day. The truth of the new is never on the news. But you can catch it here, News on the Flip Side, only on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network.
Thank you.
Okay, everyone. Welcome back to Perspective X. And I'm Stephanie Benetti, a.k.a. Radio Jesus, and thou shalt have a show. And I'm here with Jill Marie Morris, Radio Moses, and we are speaking with Scott Michaels, and he is the owner of the famed Dearly Departed Tour Co. in Hollywood, and he's a director, producer, historian, and we've had an interesting show so far. Welcome back, everyone, and welcome, guys.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Scott, so during break, we had mentioned a little known history fact for most of the world, it seems, about the St. Francis Dam disaster in northern L.A. County, and that was part of a tour that I happened to go with you for last fall for the Dearly Departed weekend. And explain to the listeners just a real brief synopsis of the history of the dam and what happened, and then we'll go into some unusual events that occurred when we were there on the tour.
Okay, well, the dam was located just north, probably about an hour north of Los Angeles in the Santa Clarita Valley. And William Mulholland, everyone knows the name Mulholland because of Mulholland Drive, but William Mulholland was responsible for bringing water to Los Angeles. And by building the St. Francis Dam, that's how they were going to get the water from up north, basically, and bring it down here, and that was going to be the reservoir. And this dam took a couple of years to build. It took a couple of years to fill. And then one night, it broke. And the sad thing about it, well, there are lots of sad things about it, but
yeah.
Somebody had spotted a leak earlier in the day, and Mulholland sort of went up there himself and surveyed it and said, well, that's natural. That's just going to happen. And it was just before midnight that very night that the dam broke. As I mentioned, it took 2 years to fill it, and the entire thing was emptied in 20 minutes. There was 140 foot water, a tidal wave. This wiped out over 600 people, in villages. They were finding bodies down in, Mexico. I mean, and that's, you know, a considerable distance. I had known the story, and I'd been up there before to the dam site, and I didn't, it surprised me how few people in Los Angeles knew that story. And although William Mulholland died in shame, ultimately, he is responsible for doing it. He just didn't sort of live long enough to see the success of his project. And I have to, mention that when we went out to tour the dam site, Musick, an historian who wrote a book called Hollywood Remains to Be Seen, all about the cemeteries in Los Angeles, he did this research and he guided us on this tour to the dam site and explaining exactly what happened in the location where it happened. And it was quite something.
It was. Go ahead, Steph.
No, go ahead. You were there.
Well, Scott had also prepared a cross to basically bless the area of the dam. And just a little visual, it's in the middle of this beautiful canyon valley area, and it's pretty high up as far as where the dam was actually structured, between two opposing, I don't know what you would call them. And now it's basically, when we had gotten up there, there is some rubble, correct? And a couple of the struts or ribs to the dam are still remaining, Scott, if I remember.
Oh, yeah, yeah. If you hold up a picture of the dam and you could see the rubble, I mean, there's pieces of the dam, you know, a mile down the road that are the size of a house.
Yeah,
but you can actually make out pieces of the dam in the ruin there, yeah.
And so Scott, more than half the tour, decided to climb down some rocks and go through some pretty thick shrubbery, and I decided not to opt after instruction of snakes. I said, nope, I'm not going there. I'll stay here on the side. And Scott and some other people were more adventurous and went through and over to the actual middle of the dam area, or what remained of it, and he had a cross, a large wooden cross. And at the time that I was standing with a group of people watching them, and who was leading the prayer? Was it Mark?
Mark did. Mark led the prayer.
Mark led the prayer, And I don't know what it was. All I can tell you is it felt like all of a sudden it was very warm and very sunny. And it felt like hundreds of hands, I'm speaking as a medium right now, hundreds of hands pushing the water back up into the dam. And at that very, and I'm talking about this to the people that were standing next to me. I said, oh my gosh, I just got such a strong feeling as the prayer was going on that hundreds of hands were just like pushing it back. And at that moment, this came from out of nowhere, and I am not making this up. This strong wind came rushing through opposite of the valley, and this dark cloud came over, and then when the prayer was over, the sun came out. And I have to tell you, it was one of the most profound experiences I have ever had, I'm going to say, as a person and as a medium, because it was as if hundreds of people had just come in thanks and in gratitude and just wanted to erase this tragedy by pushing. It was literally like they were pushing the water back up, like they didn't want to remember it as having come down and killed them. It was amazing. It was incredible. And there are photographs that I have, and maybe I'll post them again on Facebook at some point when I can find them again. But you'll see the change in the weather out of nowhere, and you'll see what was going on with the prayer service from my vantage. But people that were around me heard me explain this immense feeling. And how was that for you guys over there?
Well, I mean, it was, I mean, you can't not situation like that and realize that you were at the foot of this enormous structure that just crumbled and took so many lives with it. That alone is quite profound. But then when Mark led the prayer, and I still get really kind of choked up when I think about it, you can't yeah. not be in a situation like that and not be hit with it emotionally. It was it was very, very moving, and I'm not that kind of a person, you know.
Yeah.
It was something, and I'm glad that we were there, and I'm glad that maybe it gave, you know, those people some sort of peace, or at least, you know, at least them happy that they got the acknowledgement.
Yeah, they were valid. For sure they were validated.
How did you guys meet, Jill and Scott?
That's a story in itself. Do you want to answer that, Scott, or do you want me to?
Well, I can tell you that Jill approached me. Well, you tell about then the coincidence of board or something. So why don't you start the story?
Okay. a few years ago, for my youngest son's high school graduation, a year after grad, because he was busy with Army stuff, he wanted to go on a cruise, so it was a graduation present. And we went on a Mexican Riviera cruise. I went with some friends of ours. We went on the cruise together, and afterwards, it was my birthday, and we all wanted to do something to end the cruise and Kyle's celebration. So we were like, we've got to go on the Dearly Departed tour. And I was the one. I said, I've seen it. I've heard all about it. This is awesome. And everybody knows me in my circle that I'm a medium. So they're like, oh, yeah, yeah. So we booked the tickets. All of us go on the tour. And I had briefly, and I know he doesn't remember, but briefly met Scott when my family and our friends were getting on the tour bus that day, the beginning of June of, it was 2010. So we all pile on, and it was an amazing tour. And so I come out with my book, and I actually had the thought of doing something with the tour company initially. At first, I was trying to think of different things to do, and I had reached out to Scott. I'd sent him a copy of the book. This was months before. And then I had to do this little thing, medium well, and I was visiting restaurants and bars in Southern California and hotels and whatnot and doing haunted history on them and doing readings at the properties, and it was a lot of fun. And one of the locations is Bordner's, which I highly recommend to anybody. I love Bordner's in Hollywood. And I was talking to the woman that I was setting everything up, Alex, and it was getting closer to do like a run through of the little show. So as as I'm talking to Alex about details, she goes, oh, I've got some people that want to meet you that have, you know, heard about your book. And I'm like, okay, cool. So I arrive, and she's introducing me to people, and Scott's one of them. And he didn't even realize. It was just really so random, and we just, you know, connected because of the histories and you know, what we're interested in and so on and so forth. And he has been very gracious with, you know, taking tours and having me be part of different things. And I have totally enjoyed him and his group and the Dearly Departed staff, and Troy as well, and as just really getting to know people and being part of this and him including me in things and sharing his knowledge with me. And it's just bizarre. It's really a very strange.
Well, I mean, all things happen for a reason. We know that. I mean, Jill, even how you and I got together, and we've been friends now for years, you know, doing radio and whatnot. So,
yeah. So Scott's been, you know, I love him and his company, and I really am grateful for the opportunity he has given me and what he has shared with me, and really, I can't say enough good things.
Oh, you're so kind. You know, that when we were at Bordner's that night, that was a really unusual situation too, Stephanie. Jill was sort of picking up on different people at the bar. And we were sitting in the back, and she picked up on somebody that is around Troy. Troy's my partner, and you picked up on a gentleman that sort of is, I don't want to, what is it, Angel or
Liam? Yeah.
Yes. Liam. Yes. And then you mentioned this incident that was going to happen where you said you're going to be driving down the street and there will be headlights, there will be swerving, and you're going to be fine, but just make sure that you thank Liam. Don't be worried. It's going to be okay. You're not going to get hurt, but just be aware that that's going to happen. And it just unfolded like 10 minutes later, exactly like that, exactly the way Jill had described it.
Yeah, they had left, and I think it was, you had called Sue's phone, I think it was.
Yeah.
And had told me, you're never going to believe what just happened. But that whole night was very unusual. The going to that spot out in the alley, and it was, again, like Stephanie said, I don't think things happen coincidentally. I think they're meant to be, and it's just been a really nice experience.
No, it has. It really has. I've enjoyed. I enjoy your company, and I look forward to you coming back to LA in the autumn.
Yeah, I can't wait.
So you guys were talking about a mausoleum story during the break, and I'd like to throw it there. So why don't we? I know we're going to be running out of time shortly, but we do have time for that. So what was that?
Go ahead, Scott.
Last year during the Dearly Departed weekend, I arranged dinner in a mausoleum out in Mountain View Mausoleum out in Altadena, and we set up tables and chairs inside the mausoleum. So we were literally having dinner amongst the dead. It was a gorgeous, gorgeous mausoleum with statuary and beautifully painted ceilings and light fixtures. You know, it's absolutely spectacular. And there were about 80 of us there for dinner. And the chief coroner for the County of Los Angeles was the main speaker. But a few people have had that night had experiences in the mausoleum.
Mm-hmm.
And Jill, you were one of them, weren't you?
Yeah, the builder of the mausoleum, this was really strange. I was doing my own thing before before Craig got up and was speaking, and I was kind of wandering around. I'd never been in a mausoleum, and I have to tell you, if some people are creeped out by having an event at one, it was a truly beautiful, very interesting place to have it. And so I'm wandering around, and I said to Mike, who was with me at the time, I said, oh, there's this guy, he is like making sure everything is like how it should be, where it should be. He is like right on me. And he showed me over to, at the ends of the mausoleum, one of the ends, there is this large, I don't know what they're called. It's like the
crypt.
Crypt. Thank you. And essentially, I said, this is him. And Mike goes, well, I think that's the guy who built this place. And it was, actually. And he was on me all night long. Just, he was very happy. He was, you know, it wasn't anything bad. And I was like, my gosh, this is so incredible. And there was just a very different vibe. It was very peaceful. It was truly a unique venue for sure. And I hope to God you can get something like this.
I don't know. Part of me is thinking, no, we're not going to do this again because there's no way it could be that cool. But there were at least two people had seen figures, people that were not, you know, people that pick up on that normally, you know what I mean? I saw people walking around in the balcony, and there was nobody there, and the footsteps and the whole bit, and there was nobody there. Troy actually was down one hallway with Christine, and they had footsteps come after them, and something to that effect. It was nothing threatening. It was just there was lots of activity there that night, though.
Yeah, there was, and it was really an amazing place to have the event, and the dinner was fantastic, and it was just awesome. The whole day, the whole night was just incredible, and I give you a lot of kudos for figuring that one out, because that would have been something that I would have overlooked in all seriousness. Really, to have an event at a mausoleum, I did not know what I was walking into, and I'm serious. But I was pleasantly surprised.
Well, I had great people helping me with that, and hopefully all those people will be helping me again for this year for the planning of it, because we had a ball doing it. It was a lot of work, but it was really fun. So hopefully Stephanie, you can make it this year. It would be really nice to meet you in person.
I would love to.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, Steph. Scott, just shout out if people want to get a hold of you or want more information. What's the best way they could do that?
If you go to dearlydepartedtours.com, and there's a link an email link right there, and that'd be great to hear from people. Or Facebook, okay. Dearly Departed Tours on Facebook, and Find a Death on Facebook, and all sorts of.
Yeah, I'm going to send you a friend request on Facebook, Scott.
Great.
And we'll post the archive to you as well of tonight's show. And, you know, we thoroughly enjoyed having you on. And I know our audience, from what I see in our chat room, has enjoyed it as well. I mean, there's been lots of questions, people talking about what we're talking about. So, you know, we really appreciate you coming on the program tonight.
Yes, they've all said they've enjoyed the show. Sorry, Scott, go ahead.
No, I just say thank you so much, both of you, for having me. I certainly I enjoyed myself very much.
Yes, thank you so much. And I just want to, again, let everybody know dearlydepartedtours.com and findadeath.com. Scott Michaels, director, producer, owner of Dearly Departed Tours. Wonderful guest. We thank you for your time tonight. And hopefully you'll come back. We've had lots of positive feedback, like Steph said, in the room. They said, damn good show, excellent show, love the show. So thank you, Scott.
Thank you both. Thanks so much.
All right. Thank you and good night, Scott. All right, so everyone listening, you know, I didn't mention in the earlier part of our program that our website is www.perspectivex.info, and we'd always love some feedback, or you can listen to our archives and provide feedback there. And as always, we appreciate our listeners. And I just want to mention a couple other things. You know, this week I'm actually co-hosting on Friday night at 11 p.m. Eastern Time on the Galactic Connection, and I'll be interviewing Erica Getch on her own program. So I have a lot of radio going on these days, so I'll be doing that Friday night, as well as on Saturday night I'll be with Joe Montaldo, as always, News on the Flip Side, 3-hour program, and that commences at 7 p.m. Central Time to 10 p.m. So, you know, that, and I think that really concludes our program tonight. Jill, you have anything you want to say out there?
Yes, make sure you listen to News on the Flip Side, or as some of you call it, News on the Nip Side. And Saturdays, I join everybody for the Radio Republican. What is it? Radio Republican?
No, Joe, you screwed me up there. Joe is Republican Jesus.
Republican Jesus.
I am Radio Jesus. You're Radio Moses, and all of these. all of these names are really just unfolding as our programs commence. You know, I have no idea. I don't even know why I'm named this. Depeche Mode comes on now during the intermissions of the shows. Very funny stuff. You know.
It is. And two, I just wanted to shout out next week on Perspective X, we are going to have Christy Bradshaw, correct? Is that right, Steph?
Absolutely. And she actually is a very interesting woman. She's a great friend of mine. And she is all about the environment and spiritualism, and she's a lot to offer, and we're going to bring her on the program as well. You know, it's really not, we haven't really had guests as our thing, but, you know, this week and next week, yes, we're going to do that, and then we'll carry on.
Sounds good. And thank you, everybody. Remember PerspectiveX.info. Hit up the show archives. Get an idea of what's coming down the pike. And thank you, everyone. And once again, thanks to Scott Michaels for making it a great show. Everybody,
absolutely.
Take care.
Absolutely. And you've been listening to the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. And this has been UPRN 107.9 FM out of New Orleans. And this is Jill and I saying goodnight, everyone. And thanks for listening to our show.
Good night.